and a book to the loving service of our higher power. And the first speaker is Phil. I met Phil like a year or so ago. He was my grand sponsor for a while. And Phil's a great guy, man. Without any further ado, I introduce you, Phil.
My name's Phil. I'm an addict.
Hey, Phil. Hey, Phil.
Glad this big crowd's here. I'm going to start off saying I've been clean since August 27th, 1982, and I'm really grateful for that. And I don't say it to brag or anything because it's my time, and I believe this fellowship is a day-at-a-time deal, and that, you know, what we do in this fellowship is how we are. And I'm going to start off with, you know, that section you talked about. It said, it ends with, we remain trusted servants in gratitude and love and service. And we read that a lot in our business meeting, even, when we start off, to try to keep us focused on what we're there for. As you know, I got clean in 1982, and we didn't have a book here in Houston. They used the book of the other fellowship. And, man, I struggle with that. You know, even though it has a lot of good stuff in it, I'll never discount the other fellowship that saved my life, because they're they're the ones that introduced me to Narcotics Anonymous, because they said, you know, you probably fit better there. You're welcome here, but, you know, we're not sure how to really help you. And because they would tell me stuff like change the words to drugs or addiction, stuff like that. So, you know, if you find my original book, I actually was trying to go through and scratch out all the words that didn't pertain to me. And, you know, and it just was a very difficult thing. And we started seeing some manuscripts come around, you know, and that people were voting on. But, you know, it was, and you'll, if you go to the history one, you'll see, because Gary V will be there. And he's one of them that was involved in some of that stuff. And, but also our communications wasn't real well back then, you know. Heck, I didn't even have a home phone, so, you know, I couldn't, much less the internet, so how am I going to keep up? It was by mail. But I'd heard there was books, and when I was about a year clean, I lost this good job that I had when I got clean. Somehow I managed to hang on to this really good job, and they only kept me about a year because what I'd done in the past, they just couldn't get over it, you know. And finally let me go, and I was in a really bad place. And some friends of mine said, hey, there's a world convention in New York City, we ought to go. And I thought, well, man, New York City, heck, man, I'd like to go to New York City. I don't know about this convention thing, because I didn't know anything about convention. We didn't have them. And I had a friend of mine, Gary H, who convinced me to go, and he was telling me that he's the one that changed my attitude and relapsed, because I was in such a bad place by losing this good job. I'm thinking, what's happened to my life? I'm doing all the right things. I'm working steps. I'm going to meetings, doing all this, and then this great job I have is gone, and there's no jobs in Texas that pay like that. And I was turning down jobs, so I finally got my money up and decided to check. I'll go with y'all to New York to this convention, because they told me that Jimmy Kay was going to be there. And I said, yeah, because I got some questions for that dude, man. He's the guy they say started Narcotics Anonymous. I had no idea how old he was. I didn't know he had all these times clean. I'm thinking it was just a guy probably my age, you know. So I'm so backwards about what I knew about Narcotics Anonymous. And we did. We made the trip down there, and Gary proceeded to tell me on the plane that I was in a relapse, you know. And that was like fighting words back when we had clean. Because, see, there wasn't a lot of meetings in Houston. We said there was more meetings than there were, but we would just move, you know, like we'd go, hey, you know, all of us are going to go over this place here, and we go, hey, look, we got a new meeting, you know. I mean, like, we could have really stayed at somebody's house and had that same meeting every night, because it wasn't that many people. But we thought numbers were real important, so we were trying to build them up. And so we got there, and he kept telling me that. And I says, man, what do you mean? You know, and he says, because, you know, you consider relapse using. And he goes, but relapse really comes in three stages. It's the stinking thinking, doping thinking, and then doping. And long as you can stop it in the first two stages, you just don't have to change your clean date. That was it. And so I had this profound. I thought this guy was, you know, he had about 8 or 9 years in the fellowship, and, you know, nobody had time. You know, nobody came over that sick NA back then, unless, you know, a lot of people just didn't come. You know, they thought we were, you know, because we didn't have a book. We used all their literature. We used everything. But we did have one thing, because I went to the first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I was in this treatment facility, and Stan had came meet me, and they had this big book, you know, that I was supposed to scratch out all that stuff, alcohol and addict stuff in it. And I go to my first NA meeting, and they hand me this little white book, and they go, "This is our book, and it'll fit in your back pocket." And I thought, yes, this is my fellowship. Because this is a hell of a lot easier to learn this than to learn everything these other people are trying to tell me I need to learn. And so we did. We studied that book. We used that book a whole lot. But, you know, I have a degree in writing, so I love the literature. I love all kinds of literature. I read a lot of stuff, you know. I'm one of those that will tell you right off the bat that if you just gave me a book, yeah, I probably wouldn't have stayed clean, because that wasn't enough for me, because I tried lots of books. But, you know, I do love guidance, and I love this, our book, because of who wrote it, and I understood it. But I just wanted to see it. That's what I really wanted to do. I'd seen a little manuscript. So when we got to the World Convention, New York is a lot more expensive than I thought, you know. So I was pretty much out of money pretty quickly, you know. When I got there, the guy took me out to this policeman that had got clean, been a heroin addict, got clean, took me out to eat lobster. Well, shoot, man, that's not the kind of stuff I'm used to eating where I came from, you know. A burger a day, you know, is about all I could usually afford. So the money went pretty quick, but I saved some money, and I went the first day I was there. I went to the merchandise dealer, and I says, "Hey, I hear y'all have books." And they go, "Yeah." And I says, "How much are they?" And they says, $10 a piece. So that's amazing. We still sell our books for $10. So, man, that's pretty good. 37 years later, we're still selling them for 10 bucks. So I told them, I don't know why I asked this, I says, "How much would be a case of them?" And they said, $100. I said, "Well, how many you need?" It's just 10. They're $10 a piece, no matter how many. They didn't even give me a break. You know, I was from a business where if you buy more, you get a break. But they don't give you a break. They just say, "Hey, yeah." What I did get is I got a box with them all boxed up in to take back. And then I says, "That's great." And they says, "Hey, but we got something else we could get you." And I says, "What's that?" And they says, "We have some of the red books left over." And I says, "Red books? What's the red books?" And they go, "Those are the first books that are numbered that we made to raise money for the blue books." I said, "Well, hell, why didn't we ever see any red books? You know, we didn't get a choice." But I bought a red book, you know. And then I talked everybody in that was with me. I would tell them, I'd drag them over to that merch. I said, "Buy books. Let's take books back to Houston." Because, you know, man, I was so happy. When you tell me we have new literature, I'm at some place and I get it, I start reading it right away just to see if I relate to it and like it. And, man, this book spoke to me. There was stuff I understood, you know. And I always quote this one line in our book. It says, "Our real value is being ourselves." Mm. You know, and that's my favorite. I underline it every book I have and anybody else's book, because, you know, that's where I was lost in. I was so busy spending my life trying to change who I was that I didn't realize there was any value in my life. Mm. And I got down there and I started meeting other people. And like, there was 4,000 people at that convention in 1983. Man, I'd never seen 4,000 addicts together anywhere, you know. I mean, so I was like, wow, they're all clean. And I had a heart, because I struggled when I first got clean, believing that the room full of people were clean, you know. When we said it, I said, "Yeah, you know, that don't sound right. I've been clean for 20 years, you know, and I use every day, even when I was doing it." But, you know, there was people that was different, and that was one of the times that Jimmy Kay spoke. And I was telling Gabriella before this that, you know, one of the things I had a question, I heard he was going to be there, and so I met somebody from California that worked for World Service. She said, "She's going to introduce me," and she did. She introduced me to him, but he probably looks more like I do now because I'm a lot older than him. But he looked really, really old when I was really, really young, okay? You know? So I have to preface that a little bit. But, you know, he came up to me, and he says, "I hear you had something to ask me." And I said, yeah, you know, like, I'm a heroin addict. You know, I know I belong. Or, you know, we had this thing back in the 70s and 80s. We got confused a little while about cocaine being a narcotic. You know, that's how stupid we were, you know. Like, you know, that, you know, so, but I want to know, because we had people coming in on Valiums and marijuana and stuff. And I said, well, what makes people an addict? You know, I was still trying to struggle with that because, you know, the little white book didn't come in a lot of detail like this book. And so it's all hearsay. We was all saying a bunch of crap in the meetings, you know. And so, you know, we sort of made stuff up as we go. Good thing that we didn't write the book in Texas, you know, early on, because it would have been a little bit different, you know. And the words would be spelled a lot differently. We don't use the big words. I tell people I'm a small-time writer. I write simply, you know. I don't need – if you start writing the big words, yeah, I can understand it, but it's like a waste of my time. And so I asked him, I says, what would you consider somebody an addict, you know? And he touched me on my temple and told me, if you don't wake up there, it don't matter to you, because you can't ever make that decision for somebody else. You know, I still remember that, because that made a profound change in the way I reacted. Because from that day forth, if you said you're an addict, as far as I'm concerned, you're an addict. You can stay as long as you want. You know, that's where our fellowship works. My deal is I hate to see people die from this disease. And this book is a textbook. And a lot of people, and I'm real careful about how I do this with people. You know, I know a lot of people that come to a first meeting and we get them up there and we act like we're a bookstore and we want to make sure they got 3 or 4 books when they walk out and we get $30, $40 of their money and stuff like that. Man, that's not. And so some of them people don't come back because, you know, they've been to schools, they've been to class, they've been to prison and some of the classes, you know, the drug classes are supposed to cure them. And so they think that's just another one. So I carry them in my briefcase, the little white book. And that's why I get them. I say, hey, take this, read this, see if this is for you. Because I want you to come back. You know, our book has a lot of great things. He says, it says in the introduction, it says, we offer only a proven plan for daily recovery. You know, and that's what this is. You know, it's a textbook. It closes in the original introduction. It says, it is our hope that this book will help the suffering addict find the solution that we have found. Our purpose is to remain clean just for today and to carry the message of recovery. And that's what this book is for. You know, we had a group years ago that in Houston that had a lot of meetings, fell apart, just sort of got away from some of the things we needed to do. And we started it back up with just a few. In fact, Jimmy's one that came and got me out of another meeting to come over to this little bitty meeting with 4 or 5 people. And the thing we decided to do is every meeting, every subject will come out of this book. You know, and what we found out is that group grew spiritually because there was a basis. You know, and I think that's real important in our meetings is to have a basis. And that's just like I've had a lot of schooling, so I love how this book can teach us things. And what I always do, I always love books, but written by people that experienced it. I hate books, and I've had some of these books written by people that haven't even experienced what they're writing about because, you know, you sort of look, you can look right through them and go, yeah, you know, that sounds, you know, there's certain things that sound logical. Like in engineering, I do a lot of stuff, and they come from A&M, and they tell me, yeah, this is the way we told them it works. I said, that's great. It don't work that way. You know, so you can go over here and spend all day trying to do it your way if you want to, but when you get tired of it, come over here, because these guys that have been doing it for 20 years have a way that works. You know, and that's what our fellowship's like. You know, that we as we use our experience, you know, they kept changing the book. I'm going to tell you something else. Right after I got those books, I came back, gave Stan one of them, which if somebody in Houston found this book, please return it to him, because about a year ago, he left it in a meeting and somebody ended up with it. So please return that book to him. You know, and I was going to bring my, I have a red one and blue one still left. I gave 9 of them away, and I was hoping to, I was going to bring them, but I had my grandson over today. That's something that's different when you stay clean a long time. If you start doing things that people start trusting you, and they trust me with the grandkid, but they probably shouldn't because he wore me out. So, and that's what this fellowship does, though.
It teaches me how to live. And that's what the book is about. When I tell people to read the book and read certain things, I'm wanting them to understand. You know, we have more and more books. We got a lot of books. We only had one for a long time. And in fact, I moved to Austin 6 weeks after the convention. And they didn't have a book. Hell, they needed a meeting, you know, because I just moved down there. You know, I figured that the place I scored all them drugs at probably had the same fellowship that Houston had. And so I just moved down there one weekend when my friend asked me, told me he was trying to get clean. And I went to this park over on the east side where they said this NA meeting was. And there was and I always remember, there was a little blue Volkswagen shining on a concrete bench. And these two people were sitting on it, a couple. He had his arm around her, and I pulled up and asked them where the clubhouse was. And they said, clubhouse? This is just a city park. And I said, you sure it's not a clubhouse? They said, no. He says, are you looking for the NA meeting? I said, yeah. And he goes, this is it. I says, just you two? And they said, yeah. I says, where's the building? And I goes, oh, we lost it a while back. There's no. They said, you know, I went back. Those people weren't there. Never saw them again. You know, so I'm thinking, so I called Stan. I said, man, I might have screwed up, man. I moved it down. There's no NA yet, you know. And luckily there were some other people that had been in the fellowship, and we got together, started meeting. So they not only didn't have books, they didn't have meetings. So I had books that I brought, and they were anxious to read it because it was something different. You know, there's some substantial ideas in it. But the deal was in December that year, they had the second edition. And I went, what? We spent all this time to get a first edition, and I'm just going to pass all the books out, now you got a second edition? You know, and like, I'm not the guy that likes it, so, you know, I went around telling everybody for a long time, but man, I hope we don't do any more editions. You know, we're at the sixth edition, but I thought, well, wait a second, you know, what's wrong with us? Why can't we get it right the first time? Because this other fellowship tell me they wrote a book in 1939, and they're still using it, and we're changing ours yearly, you know, and, you know, and, but the deal was we were making it better, and I learned, you know, like I say, communication is so good today, what they have, because you could find out stuff. Back then we couldn't, you know, it wasn't no, you know, unless you could pick up the phone and hope somebody at World Service answers, you didn't know why they were doing this stuff, you know, why they were making the changes, and, you know, so we just made it better. I like that we've kept the basis of it and just corrected it, you know, that's a... That's what we need to do. We need to do it. You know, I was okay with the first one. My books are probably not worth as much as everybody else's because I've always used them. I've got lots of books around my house. I mean, they stack up. I write in them, wear the binders out of it and stuff. And so my original books are that way. They're, you know, my friends, they go, yeah, look. Some of them have bought them and they're clean. I go, God, who got those? You know, man, I used them. I highlighted in them, spilt coffee on them, and drew through them because, you know, I use them as a textbook because I think it's so important that we use it rather than sit it on a counter and look at it. You know, it's nice to have nice stuff, I guess. But, you know, I'm at that period in my life right now. I'm trying to get rid of all that nice stuff that I've kept for 20 years that just holds up space, make me live in someplace bigger when I just don't need it. And I think that's with our literature. I keep it all around my house. If you know, and it's a trick for me, to be honest with you. I put them in the bathrooms. That's sort of my reading room, you know. And so that way, I can't get away from it. So if something's going on, you know, because, you know, if you have it just in your bedroom, I just never go over to that shelf. So I set them places where when I'm there and all of a sudden look around, I got a problem, I'll reach up and I'll pick up one of those books. And every time I find what I need. And my idea of this book changes as I read it more and more. Certain things that didn't pertain to me, when I read it years later, I'm there. So I say, you know, this is a God-given book, you know, and I talk about our book. Our book said, you know, talks about God-reliant stuff, and, you know, and I figured there was some spiritual visions that were put into this and gave us something that we needed, you know, and I love Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I was just in New Mexico for 10 days, and they don't have a lot of meetings in northern Mexico, and the one meeting I was going to, I had planned, didn't know the guy, I was at a music festival, and the guy was putting it on. I told him I'd be someplace, and then I was trying to find out the only NA meeting was that night. And I thought, God, man, you know, what's happening? You know, sometimes I wish we would grow faster, because it's real important to me to, even with all my time, it's important to me to feel at home. You know, I can have things with all my years clean, and then I can have stuff going on in my life, and I can go sit in an NA meeting and just sit in it and leave with that sense of comfort that I've been home, you know. And that's what Narcotics Anonymous has been to me, is that there's people that love me when I couldn't love myself. There's people that showed me the ropes. There are people that, I mean, they literally used to read this book to me. I was in a treatment facility, and this guy would come down, you know. He says that I went to a treatment facility that I didn't know anything about. I just needed to check in someplace because I thought I was going to go to jail sick. And that place said they'd take me on Monday, and I didn't have to come in on Saturday because I thought maybe I could get myself to change my mind before Monday. And that didn't work out. And I showed up, and I was there about 5 days in there, and I said I better start getting clean. And then they told me that, you know, this place works real good for alcoholics, not so good for addicts. And I went, what? I said, you know, no place else for me to go. This is my one shot. And there was a guy in there that brought Narcotics Anonymous to me. And he brought that's when they handed me that little white book. And he told me, he says, you know, I'm going to be your burning desire till you get one. Because I wasn't sure about this thing. I don't know about y'all. I'd never heard of Narcotics Anonymous. I'd never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never heard of any of this stuff. I was always told that the best chance I ever had with the hope that I would turn into an alcoholic, because as an addict, I was destroying my life, you know, and that's where I came from. The addiction just ran rapid in my neighborhood and in my family, and I checked in not to find a Narcotics Anonymous or anything, and I found it. You know, and I always tell people that was the miracle in my life, is that I found something that I could believe in. And I found something later that I could read and substantiate, because there's something about having our book that makes us a real fellowship, guys. I mean, we have put down what we know works. You know, I try to say that now, you know, the steps teach us how to live. I used to say that you couldn't stay clean if you didn't work the steps. Well, God of my understanding proved me wrong on that numerous times, because there's people that just refuse to work steps and they stayed clean. And so I thought, well, I better quit saying that, because now I'm starting to sound stupid, you know. And what I do know is it's time to, it was time for me to just work steps and let people work them at their own pace. And anyway, I don't have a whole lot more to say on this, except that I'm glad everybody's here in this thing. I wish we'd taken a picture, because there's a lot more people in here, so that's really great. Thank you, everybody.
My name's Victor, and I'm still an addict. I'd like to introduce our second speaker, is Gabriella A.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name is Gabriella. I'm an addict.
Hi, Gabriella.
First thing I'd like you to do is turn to the person next to you and give them a hug, please.
Oh, Cameron didn't have anybody.
I was at a meeting in Edison, New Jersey. Originally, that's where I got clean, in New Jersey. And I was clean maybe about 90 days, 60 or 90 days. And I was at a noon meeting, and this guy said, I want everybody to turn to the person next to you and give them a hug. And I was like, wow. Our basic text, our literature says, sometimes a simple loving hug can make all the difference in the world. We don't have to say anything. The language of empathy, right, speaks from the heart. That's what empathy is. And that's what I've learned in Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, I, for the first time in 23 years, my clean date is March 1st, 1996. And for the first time in 23 years, I do believe I could listen to you all night. That was it. Let me tell you, I love to hear how our predecessors laid down the groundwork for this program, how they paved the way and they pioneered. He's a pioneer, right? He paved the way for us, for you guys here in Houston, and we don't know how many other people's lives we touch when we share and we give them information, right? And all we can do is share our experience. And, you know, I sponsor a young woman in San Francisco, and it's a real delicate balance sponsoring women. Men is a different story. I can't speak on that, but I don't know, you know. I don't know what it is. I don't want to say anything that might offend anybody, but I don't know. I don't want to assume, because we know what happens when we assume, right? So, I went to school. I went for job retraining in Seattle. And the teacher in this one class said, "You assume too much." And we never know where the lessons in life are going to come from, because our higher power, right, who I call God, and it explains that, it references that in this paragraph. I got to put my glasses on because I can't focus on this page without them. And our higher power puts different people in our life for a reason, although it's not always revealed to us why. It might be, and I think Phil referenced this, it might be years later down the road and you say, "Gee, I remember that person said this to me," or "That person said that to me," or... You know, and I didn't understand why. And then something happens in our lives and we learn to apply that, what we learned in our lives, or what we learned from that person, excuse me. And before I get too far ahead of myself, I wanted to point out the first thing I thought of that popped out to me when I read this paragraph was hope. There's a lot of hope in this paragraph. And somebody said HOPE is an acronym for hearing other people's experience. So, I don't know, you know, I mean, I just heard a lot of things that I didn't know, and I've seen the video on YouTube, Jimmy Kay sharing at that convention. And, you know, we come, a lot of us, I mean, for me, I come from humble beginnings, and it sounds like that might be true for Phil. I don't know him that well. But, you know, we were talking before the meeting about this meeting in New York City at St. Mark's Place. Ooh. And, yeah, and I went to a noon meeting there. And, again, I was only clean maybe, you know, 60 days, 90 days, I don't know. But I remember I took a taxi there, and it was colder than a witch's tit, okay, in January, right? And I had my gloves on, and I left them in the taxi cab, right? And all I could think of was that day that I hitchhiked 80 miles one way with no gloves on from Bud Lake, New Jersey, and it was about 5 degrees out. And I'm standing out in front of the lake hitchhiking to New York City to get a bag of weed, okay? I get in the car, this guy I don't know, never met this guy before. He said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to New York City." "What's going on there?" I said, "I'm going to get some weed." He says, "Oh, I can get you some weed, right?" I said, "Oh, okay, I don't know this guy. He could have kidnapped me and thrown me in the trunk. I don't know, right?" So we get there, right? I'm waiting in the car, and I'm thinking, man, I hope it's good weed, right? I didn't care what, you know, I'm just like, damn, I just hope this is, I don't know this guy, right? I'm scared. He's in the house. Like 20 minutes, right? Now I'm freaking out. I'm like, oh my God. Like, you know, now it's too late. I'm already in the car. Where the hell am I going to go? There's no bus. I had to focus on getting that weed. So he comes out, he gets me the weed, we start smoking it, right? I said, "Can you get me any more? I need more," right? I mean, really, this is how my addiction was. I didn't have to have, it was never enough. and I knew it wasn't going to last, right? Now, I don't know how the hell I'm going to get home, right? I'm in Weehawken, New Jersey, right, by the Holland Tunnel, right, or the Lincoln Tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And I get into Port Authority, and I get a bus back to Dover, New Jersey, but there's no transportation from Dover to Bud Lake. It's like, I gotta wait for a stagecoach or something. I don't know. You know, I'm thinking, all I know is I had my weed and somehow everything was gonna work out all right. This was how my addiction was. I didn't give a shit about anything else. I didn't care about getting busted or going to jail or, no, I didn't care about any of that. Because I didn't care about the consequences. And I knew there would be consequences, but I still didn't care, right? And that, I believe, is what one of the aspects that makes me an addict for me. And I was thinking about that when Phil was sharing about what makes you an addict. An addict to me was somebody who stuck a needle in their arm, is laying in the gutter, right? A junkie. And I never did needles. I never shot drugs up. Right? And I'm like, I don't know, man, but I know I can't stop smoking weed. I just couldn't stop. Like, I had to have it, right? And it wasn't only drugs. It was sex. It was money. It was, you know, pain and misery, right? They say misery loves company. And I was a very unhappy, miserable. I had a lot of issues. I had a lot of baggage. I had a lot of emotional, physically abused, psychologically abused by my parents for years. And without going into too much detail, I just want to say the state of New Jersey saved my life. Okay? Really. Because if it wasn't for the fact that my father beat the crap out of me, right, sent me to school black and blue, nothing ever happened to him. He was like the Teflon Don, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing ever happened to him. And anyway, be that as it may, when I came into Narcotics Anonymous, my first meeting was in 1985. And the first basic text that, I didn't read the basic text at that time. Somebody gave me the money, it was $5 for the basic text at that time. I don't know where you got yours, but mine was only $5. So I don't know what I'm not gonna. I'm not gonna assume, because I'm just saying mine was $5. I remember because somebody gave me the money, right? And anyway, I'm just having a little fun. Anyway, that's who I am now, right? I like to joke around, but you know what? Recovery is a serious business, right? It can come at you from many different angles when we least expect it, you know. It comes to me in my dreams, right? I could dream about having a pile of cocaine, right? And it's just like, where does this shit come from? And then I'm gonna be honest, like a lot of times I feel like I wake up from the dream, I feel like I used and I blew my clean time. It's a very cunning, baffling, powerful disease. Make no mistake about it. And I wanted to talk a little bit about gratitude because it talks about that in here. And I wanted to focus on, you know, gratitude and hope. Those are two big spiritual principles. And when they say not only you have to do the step work, but you have to learn how to apply these spiritual principles in your life. So I really had no... When I came into recovery, when I got clean, I didn't know about gratitude. I didn't know about hope. All I knew is I was beaten. I was done. I couldn't use anymore. The drugs weren't, what I thought was my solution, weren't working for me anymore. I knew I was done. When I find myself putting my hands around the neck of another human being and trying to end his life, for me, I know it's time to stop. That was my final bottom. Right? And so I checked myself into a detox, and after four grown men pulled me off of this guy. And I checked myself into a detox and I sat there for hours, right? And I owed child support. And I'm like, oh, they're going to arrest me. I'm going to jail. And there's no, if anybody knows anything about child support, there's no bail, right? You can't like bail yourself. Somebody can't come and like bail you out, right? So they give you like a percentage, right? Or whatever. Anyway, yeah, wreckage of my past. So I cleaned that up. And for the first time in my life, I'm able to get a passport. And I'm planning on going to the World Convention in Australia in 2021. So I know I'm skipping around a lot. I have a lot of things going around in my head that I'd like to talk about. But so that was the problem, right? So now I want to talk about the solution. Because I could talk about the problem and tell drug stories all day. But I just wanted to touch on that real quick and let you know. My life was insane and unmanageable. They said I was a functional addict. You know what? Because I worked every day. But what about I didn't pay any bills? What about that I slept in my car and didn't take a shower, right? What about that? That's, how is that functional? How is that sane? How is that manageable? It's none of those, right? So I had to learn how to live life on life's terms and learn about acceptance. Right. And I always say there's two parts to step one. There's admitting that you're powerless over your addiction, that your life was unmanageable, but accepting it. And I feel like that's a big cornerstone of my recovery is acceptance. And I didn't, when it says a better way of life, I didn't have a life. I had no friends. Anybody I came in contact with, I would start a fight with them. I would start a verbal argument. And they would look at me like with like deer in the headlights type thing, right? They're like, and they would walk away from me. I'm like, what did I say wrong? I didn't realize what it was, the harm I was doing, how it was pushing, I was pushing people away constantly. You know, I mean, a wall, man, I had a big wall I put up. You know, and anyway, so I had to learn about, we did, my first experience with working the steps was out of the basic text. We didn't have a step working guide, which I think asks too many questions, but what do I know? I'm just an addict. I don't know. I mean, I answer them and I, maybe it helped me feel a little bit better. I don't know. It's like a scale, you know. I got to find some balance. So I feel like the steps help me keep some balance in my life. And not every day is a good day. You know, I was in a funk for a little while, and I said, let me go to a few more meetings. And then I started feeling a little bit better. And I'm like, maybe there's a connection. I don't know. Could be, right? But before I forget, I just want to thank the Houston area for welcoming me. Mary last night was my first person. Well, Teresina I've known for years, only we talked online and on the phone. But Mary and the women at the women's meeting were so nice last night. And the Texas barbecue. Woo-wee! That was some good barbecue. Yeah, I mean... So, and I have a lot of gratitude that I'm able to do things like this and to come to other areas and hear other people's experience, hope, right? And man, step two, being restored to sanity. God, my life was insane and unmanageable before I started using. How do you break that down? Where do you begin? You know, and then you find marijuana, you know, and it's like, poof, everything's cool. Everything's going to be okay until I run out of drugs and I run out of money every time. And then I'm in front of the same judge, probation, community service, fines, never sent me to jail.
No probation.
Yeah. And I, you know, dope fiend, the probation officer. You know, they're like, you know, hey, you got to start doing this community service or you're going to go to jail. So anyway, yeah. Anyway, so I had to learn, when I got to step two, I feel like I had to start learning about forgiveness, forgiving my abusers. They say you have to forgive yourself first. And I didn't know how to do that. And I remember my first night in detox, I was talking about, I went to detox, and my first night in detox, I sat on the edge of the bed and I said, God, please help me. And it was a sincere prayer. That was it. It was that simple. And the counselor that came and got me in the emergency room walked into my bedroom, into my room with the Narcotics Anonymous basic text. And I started reading it. I figured, I got nothing but time. But I was really willing, right? I had to have the willingness. And the reason why I say that is because that's another spiritual principle that popped out when I read this paragraph that were the topic. And I feel like I have to be open-minded and willing to accept a power greater than myself in my life in order to get some help. Yes, it's a we program. Yes, the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. Those are all true. But without a higher power, who I call God in my life, it kind of ties it all together, if you know what I mean. And I feel like doing service is really helping me immensely. Just, you know, I might not agree with what everybody says, but it helps me stay connected with people in the fellowship. It's like in school they used to say, you know, after you graduate, I went to culinary arts school in New York City in 1991, and I was on drugs too. And they said, make sure you come around and you stay in touch so we know who you are. And I feel like the fellowship is kind of the same thing. When people don't see me and I come to a meeting in San Francisco, they're like, where you been? And my response lately is here, there, and everywhere. But I get, you know what? The reality is I get around. I'm able to go to different meetings, you know, out of my area. And sometimes I don't always feel the love in the fellowship. And it's got nothing to do with anybody else. It's how I feel. And as valid as a feeling as that is, I feel like that's part of the disease that wants to separate me and isolate me from something that's trying to help me. And I can get mad and angry at the disease, but the reality is, if I don't stay clean and I don't stay connected and I don't do the work that's involved to stay clean and help myself on a day-to-day basis, one day at a time, just for today, if I don't do all of that, my life will fall apart again. Might not use right away, I don't know. But all I know is, because I learned never to say never, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And I've seen what happens to people that don't come to meetings and don't get a sponsor and don't do the step work. Yeah, they're also, it's true, it's a program of suggestions. But I didn't ask anybody what was in the bag when I was using. They say, oh, why don't you try this, do this, try this. I did it. I didn't ask any questions. Because we could complicate the shit out of this program. I could complicate the crap out of a piece of dust, right? Really. Fucking analyze the molecules or something, I don't know. Yeah, really. Really, it's crazy. It's crazy, it really is. So, you know, I get to step three and it talks about, you know, finding a power greater than yourself. And, you know, it was difficult. It was a little difficult for me because I was raised Roman Catholic, and I was made to go to church and catechism. And in church, they spoke a lot of Latin, and I didn't understand Latin, and I still don't, and I don't care to learn it. But I can go to church now, and I know this is not a religious program, but if I do go, I understand what they're saying. But they've changed some things too along the way. And I'm grateful for that experience as well. And I can find some peace and quiet in church and just sit there and meditate and pray. And it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing to be able to go somewhere and get in touch with my higher power. It's been challenging. I've had some challenges. I had some repair work that needed to be done in my apartment, right? And recently, and it was an emergency. My bathtub drain backed up, right? Might sound simple. You get a plumber with a snake, right? Or you call your landlord, right? Landlord's out of town. He's out of the country. Can't get a hold of this guy. This is an ongoing story with this guy. And it's like, and he's always got like this power control thing. He has to it's always about him. It's always like, you know, he had to take off work and lose money. Like, I don't care. You know, I've had to take off of work and lose money because I had to be responsible and take care of something, right? And be a responsible, productive member of society, right? So anyway, I'm like, yeah, well, I said, I'm glad you're fixing it. Thank you, blah, blah, blah. Instead of saying, you know, well, I don't care, you know, I'm not going to say that, but I'm thinking that. So that's where my character defects come in. Is saying the first thing that I'm thinking. And I'm thinking, I better not say that. I might not have a place to live tomorrow, right? So these are the things. Narcotics Anonymous taught me how to think ahead a little bit, right? Think about what I say before I say it. Because once I say it, you can't take it back. It's not like Facebook, posting a post on Facebook or a tweet. You could take it back. You could delete it, right? I can't delete what I say. I've said it. Or I send an email, right? Somebody said, you don't have to click send. You can write an email. What a concept, right? I can write an email and I don't have to click send. I have a choice. I didn't know that. Narcotics Anonymous taught me I have a choice about everything that I do. Not just about not using. It goes beyond that. There's an extension of every concept and everything that we learn in here. Being fully self-supporting, right? That was a big one. Paying my bills on time, paying my rent, right? Paying everything. Not only on time, but ahead of time. I'm serious. I'm so like, I if it doesn't get paid, it's on me. That's my responsibility. This is an awesome program. I can't say enough about it, you know, and this commitment that I took on in the activities committee in my area, I make the flyers for the, that's my job to make the flyers, right? And right away I want to change everything. They have a certain way that you have to put the regular Narcotics Anonymous logo on there, right? Well, that's not good enough for me. I have to go on the internet and find one that's the most like fucking flamboyant with flames and shit, right? So like you can't use that, right? But it turned out all right. I mean, I had to learn to get humble and follow some direction. That's my point. And that's one of the things that we learn, one of the concepts that we learn in Narcotics Anonymous. We don't have to understand how this program works, just be willing to follow some simple direction. So, I don't know how much time I have left. 5 minutes? 5 minutes, wow. I kind of figured I was getting towards the end. But I'm really grateful that I had this opportunity. I worked last year a little bit. I'm on permanent disability. I used to be a chef. And I was able to work a little bit last year and go to some conventions. I went to Maui, went to their convention in Hawaii. I went to Boston, Massachusetts. I got to walk the Freedom Trail. Right? I'm from New Jersey. You would think I would go, but drugs were more important. You know, that was just a fleeting thought. Yeah, I'm going to go to, you know, wherever. But now I can do it, right? I can plan things and I can do things in my life because I learned how to be successful. And that doesn't mean making a lot of money or a lot of prestige. People say to me, I go to the VA hospital, like, oh, wow, you have 23 years clean. That's fantastic. They don't know the work that's involved. It's a big commitment. There's a lot of work involved. We don't just get the book and do the assignments. After I did my first step, my sponsor said, now you get to live it. I said, what does that mean? What do you mean? I thought I was done. We go to step two now. Doesn't work that way, right? So what does Dr. Phil say? You're short on ears and long on mouth, right? So I had to take the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth and just listen. Right. So I just keep one day. Right now, it's just one day at a time. That's all I can do. Some days I feel like I'm just hanging on, and then I get a chance to speak at a convention or I volunteer, right? And I feel a little more hope. And I don't know if I said this before, but I love to hear the history of things. I love to hear the history of how you guys got your basic text and the humble beginnings of the fellowship. I'd love to hear all of that. It's important to me. And I said to my sponsee, I was telling her about, you know, Jimmy Kay. She said, who's that? I said, okay, so your next assignment is going to be to read, right? Because I take you right through the book from cut. This is the way I was taught. The next assignment is going to be to read about the history of Narcotics Anonymous, because it talks about that a little bit, not the entire history, but it talks about it on page XXI, which is 21 in Roman numerals, right? So we talked about it a little bit, and, you know, it's going to take time for her to learn some things, and I have to be patient with her. And it's about helping another addict. It's not about me controlling the outcome of the situation. That's what's important. And it took me, like I said, it was a delicate balance, and it took me many years, but I'm also very grateful for the book on sponsorship, the flat book that we have. It helped me understand some things. And I told her, I said, I'm not going to make it easy for you, but I said, I'm not going to coddle you either. I give tough love, unconditional love, but tough love. And she says things. She's doing fantastic, and I tell her to keep up the good work. She called me the other day. She's got this CPS case. It's coming to an end. I said, that's a direct result, or indirect, however you want to look at it, of working and living this program. You're doing the work. You're reaping the results. You're reaping the benefits of what you're doing. And you're going to see this. And she was happy, and I'm happy. Her happiness is my happiness. I'm just overwhelmed, you know, with happiness for this woman. And she's 26 years old. I mean, when I was 26 years old, I was using, man. I was using. I didn't care about anything else, about getting better. I didn't know about, you said you didn't know about Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't know anything about getting help. That was the furthest thing from my mind. So I'm sure I've come to the end of my time. He's shaking yes. I see from my peripheral vision. So anyway, I hope you got something out of what I shared. I see Mary left. I hope everything is okay. Maybe she went to eat dinner.
That's another meeting.
Yeah, another meeting. Well, anyway, that's all I got. Thank you for letting me share.